Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Welcome to As a Woman, Fertility Hormones and Beyond. I'm your host, Dr. Natalie Crawford, and I am a board-certified OBGYN and fertility physician, and also co-founder of Fora Fertility in Austin, Texas. Each week on this podcast, I discuss health and fertility and how they relate to your true self. Become a part of the community of collaboration that amplifies others as a woman. I hope you enjoy the episode. Hello and welcome to the As a Woman podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Natalie Crawford, and today we are having a Q&A episode all about ovulation and ovulation induction. These are some of my favorite topics because it just underscores the importance of understanding your body. If we do not understand how ovulation works, then it's very hard to understand what you're tracking, when things are normal, and therefore when things are abnormal. It also makes it really hard to know what's right or wrong when it comes to, are your periods normal? Is your luteal phase normal? What treatments are appropriate and what treatments are not? We sadly hear stories all the time, and you will hear it again in a few of the questions, where people are trying to get help and they are told to do something completely counter to what would actually help them get pregnant. It's not that people are trying to do the wrong thing. It's that even sometimes the people you go to see to try to get help for your health issues do not understand reproductive health and hormones. That's why it is so important for us to discuss this and for you to understand what ovulation is and all of these different variations so you can be your very, very best advocate. Q&A episodes are my entire favorite. You're re-inspiring me because I feel like I've covered every topic on planet Earth, even though I know I haven't. Please call and ask your questions. I'm even going to take some of your questions and do an entire episode off just that one topic, so it is a great way to get your questions answered and your content ideas out there. Call and leave a voicemail at 657-229-3672. Again, that is 657-229-3672. Leave your question. You can leave your name or you don't have to. Tell me what you're interested in and what it is that you're curious about, and we can either put it in a Q&A episode or even its own standalone episode. Some of these questions are so exceptional. You can also ask questions on Instagram. Mondays on Instagram at Natalie Crawford MD, you'll see a question box for any fertility questions you want. We will answer some of them right there on Instagram, some of them here on the podcast at the end of our regular episodes, and some will be included in the newsletter. The newsletter is not spammy. It's something to keep you updated, share my favorite things and favorite recipes, and keep you updated with fertility in the news, action steps you can take, and also answer your questions. Fertility in the news is so important right now. As you guys have heard me talk about on the podcast and on my channels, reproductive rights really are essential for you to have bodily autonomy and for us to be able to do IVF, preserve your fertility, freeze your eggs. Without these protections, your family planning is not up to you. Voting in the next election is absolutely essential. So please do not feel like you live in a blue state, therefore you are safe. We are seeing the talk that's very real and very plausible of federal bans on all reproductive rights. Whatever you believe, it's most important that you exercise your right to vote. So please make sure that you are registered to vote and you educate yourself about the politicians who you're voting for and what it is that they are going to support when it comes to your own health rights. So you can sign up for the newsletter at nataliecrawfordmd.com/newsletter. You can follow along on Instagram at nataliecrawfordmd, and you can call and leave your own voicemails at 657-229-3672. Today we're going to talk about ovulation and ovulation induction. And before I dive right in, I'm going to give you the quickest summary of ovulation because some of the points we're going to talk about, you've got to understand the basic. Very importantly, we are born with all the eggs you're ever going to have. I always like to imagine that they are kept in a vault inside your ovary, but you have all the ones you're ever going to have, you run out of them over time, and when you're out of eggs, you're in menopause. What actually happens every single month is that I want you to imagine a group of eggs is released from that vault. Each egg grows inside a small fluid-filled structure called a follicle. Now, these follicles, once they are sent out of the vault, they are either going to ovulate or die. Their time is up. What is supposed to happen when things are functioning normally is that the brain will send out follicle-stimulating hormone, or FSH, which is well-named. FSH will get a follicle to grow or an egg to grow and mature. When that egg is growing and maturing, it starts to make increasingly more estrogen. And that estrogen is talking back to your body, growing the lining of the uterus. When the brain sees that estrogen level high enough, because the brain doesn't know what's happening in the ovary. Remember, it can't see the ovary, has no idea. It relies on estrogen to be the text message back saying, hey, I'm growing an egg. When it sees that estrogen level high enough, then it is going to send out a surge of LH, or luteinizing hormone. LH is now sent out, and what LH does is it allows that follicle to rupture and the egg to be released, and this is ovulation. After you ovulate, that egg can only be fertilized for about 24 hours. So timing, this is why it is so, so important if you're trying to get pregnant to know when you're ovulating. But after that follicle has ruptured, allowing the egg to come out, it actually reforms and becomes a corpus luteum. And this is why FSH and LH are actually very well named. They're named for what they do in the female body, which is interesting because most things are named for what they do in the male body. And males still have FSH and LH made from their pituitary gland also. In men, those hormones control spermatogenesis, or the production of sperm, and the production of testosterone. But in women, FSH, or follicle-stimulating hormone, stimulates a follicle or an egg to grow and make estrogen. And LH, or luteinizing hormone, is in charge of ovulation, but also the transition from that follicle to a corpus luteum. The introduction of the luteal phase is now LH predominant, and that is when you have pulses of progesterone made from the corpus luteum in direct response to these pulses of LH sent out from the brain. The brain actually sends hormones out in Morse code fashion. And it is the frequency and the pulse amplitude that actually is determining what is made. But you have these LH pulses, therefore you are going to have pulses of progesterone. And your body doesn't have progesterone unless you ovulate. So when somebody says you're estrogen dominant, that usually is the follicular phase. And I see people have hormones checked so often, and somebody is interpreting in them without any relevance to where they are in the cycle or where they are in their ovarian function, and recommending something so, so wrong. And now a word from one of our sponsors, Quince. The weather's getting warmer, so it's time to say goodbye to jackets and sweaters and hello to shorts and tees. I wanted to update my wardrobe for the long haul without spending a fortune, and luckily I found Quince. Now I've got a lineup of timeless pieces that keep me looking effortlessly chic year after year. The best part is that Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands, but Quince partners directly with top factories, cutting out the cost of the middleman, passing the saving to us, and only working with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices. I personally cannot wait to wear my cute tan linen set this summer. So it's your turn to get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/AAW for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/AAW to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/AAW. Thank you, Quince. And now a word from one of our sponsors, Ritual. Did you know that women were excluded from clinical research policy by federal law until 1993? But women belong in scientific research. They're essential, and Ritual knows this. I choose Ritual multivitamin every day because it is easy to take, and I know that I am getting high quality and traceable ingredients in a clean and bioavailable forms. In fact, Ritual conducted a university-led human clinical trial for their Essential for Women 18 Plus multivitamin to assess its efficacy, and the results showed increase in vitamin D levels by 43% and omega-3 DHA levels by 41% in just 12 weeks. No more shady business. Ritual's Essential for Women 18 Plus is a multivitamin that you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month at ritual.com/AAW. Start Ritual or add Essential for Women 18 Plus to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/AAW for 25% off. Thank you, Ritual. In the follicular phase, this is the first part of the cycle from the day you start your period until the day you ovulate. You are growing a follicle. You are growing an egg. FSH is coming from the brain, stimulating estrogen production. No progesterone. In the luteal phase, you now have a corpus luteum making progesterone. This progesterone is going to be anywhere from 3 nanograms to 40 based on when you draw it in your blood in relation to whenever that LH pulse was happening. So it's going to range. This progesterone is going to prepare the endometrium. It grew with estrogen and now it's getting prepared for implantation. Corpus luteum can only live about 2 weeks if there is no pregnancy that comes in. When you get pregnant, that early embryo, as it starts to implant, starts to make HCG, human chorionic gonadotropin, and HCG is a hormone that rescues the corpus luteum. It now tells the corpus luteum to make constant and increasing levels of progesterone. So you went from a pulsatile stimulation to a constant and increasing stimulation, and this is why you should see a huge boost in progesterone production once you get pregnant. And that's where all the pregnancy symptoms come from. It's not the actual HCG or the actual pregnancy causing you to feel nauseous, tired, having sore breasts. That's progesterone. And so when you don't get pregnant and there is no HCG rescuing the corpus luteum, suddenly now the corpus luteum dies, progesterone drops, and you have a period. From the ovary standpoint, the process is just starting over again. And then as we get into the questions about ovulation and ovulation induction, it's very important to just understand that ovulation disorders happen on a spectrum, meaning perfect, regular ovulation and periods. You have a regular and predictable period because you have a regular and predictable ovulation. The signs of ovulation can include 1, Mittelschmerz, pain. You actually feel your body ovulate. 2, type 4 cervical mucus. This is that sticky egg white cervical mucus that you get from high estrogen levels. This is consistent with the day of ovulation. 3, a positive LH surge on a urinary kit. These are called OPK or ovulation predictor kits. Using an OPK test, once you see that LH surge the first time, you should be thinking that you're going to ovulate the next day, and there's no need to take those tests any longer because we know LH is going to be on and off surging throughout the luteal phase. 4, a progesterone rise after you ovulate. So typically about 3 days after you ovulate, your body temperature will rise, and this is what some wearables, the watches, the rings, etc., are tracking now. And then 5, regular predictable periods. If your history, you have a very regular predictable period, it should come about 12 to 14 days after you think you ovulate. But if you can look at a calendar and predict within a couple days when your period will come, you have regular ovulation. Now the spectrum of where we go wrong. First is going to be luteal phase deficiency, which means that in the luteal phase, the corpus luteum is not maybe making enough progesterone, or it doesn't live that full 2 weeks. And this can be seen clinically with a shortened luteal phase. Instead of 14 days, it's 9 days from ovulation to period, or from a lot of spotting in the luteal phase. Now, this is a diagnosis after you've ruled out other things, meaning polyps and fibroids can cause spotting, prolactin abnormalities, thyroid abnormalities, they can cause some shortened luteal phase. So a pure luteal phase deficiency on the sole diagnosis of an ovulatory dysfunction, you can't really diagnose yourself. You can say, my luteal phase is not normal. You need, though, testing to make sure it's not something else causing this. But to me, if it's not your thyroid, if it's not prolactin, what is it? It's often that your body is not growing a good enough follicle. That's my whole thought. You're not growing a good enough follicle. Therefore, it doesn't have the right capacity to be a good corpus luteum. And when we think of it that way, that makes sense why it might be the first stage in a spectrum of ovulation disorders. And maybe it's a portion of hypothalamic dysfunction. You're not sending out all the signal, but you're sending out some. Maybe it's something else. Then you're going to progress. So you're going to have shorter cycles potentially or luteal issues. And then you're going to progress to longer cycles. Now you're having longer cycles. It's not 28 days. It's starting to be 38 or 40 or 42. And then it's getting irregular, even longer, or skipping months. And then frank amenorrhea, which is absence of periods. So you can imagine a line in my brain where one end is perfectly regular, predictable periods. And then you see this increasing triangle as you progress through the spectrum of dysfunction into, I now have no periods at all. In all of these stages that are not perfectly regular and normal are abnormal. But what are causing them and what should you do about it is part of what we're going into here. I'm going to jump into your questions. We're going to hear them and I'll answer some. And I'm going to provide a little bit more context about why we might use one medication over another and what all you might need to be thinking about if you potentially have ovulation issues or are using medications for ovulation induction or superovulation.
Hi, Dr. Crawford. Thank you for all that you do. I have a question that I hope is not too long, but wanted to give you some background. I have a luteal phase deficiency, so I typically have spotting for a few days to a week in my luteal phase, and it only lasts for about 10 days. My last OBGYN told me to take progesterone daily. Thanks to you, I knew this was not correct, and I only took it after ovulation. It did fix the spotting, but I didn't get pregnant after several months using it. I've since found a new doctor, and after doing more blood work and an HSG and an ultrasound, she wants to try letrozole to boost my ovulation. Can you help me explain this? I already ovulate every month according to my OPKs. What does it really mean to boost my ovulation? Does this typically work for a luteal phase deficiency? And how many cycles do you think I should try this before just moving on to IUI or IVF? Thanks again. Bye.
This is such a great question and touches on a few of the topics we were just talking about. So first of all, let's address the fact that progesterone every day is essentially contraception. It is contraception. Progesterone-only contraception is what the mini pill is, the Depo-Provera shot, the Implanon or Nexplanon arm implant, a progesterone IUD. And that's because daily progesterone makes the lining of the uterus closed. If I say that progesterone opens and closes the implantation window, that means the moment from first progesterone to exposure gives you this perfect window where 6-ish days afterward is the exact perfect day to go have a pregnancy implant. So if you've been taking it straight for 6 weeks, we're well past your implantation window being open. It has been closed for a while. This, of course, is different. The recommendations are different if you're not trying to get pregnant, right? Balancing hormones, fixing abnormal period patterns, what may be good for you if you're in menopause, all of those things are different than what we're doing right now. Right now, we're trying to get pregnant. Taking progesterone every single day, absolutely wrong. So giving progesterone in the luteal phase after ovulation, we usually recommend starting it about 3 days after ovulation, can help some people with a luteal phase deficiency. Luteal phase deficiency, real, has a clinical set of symptoms. I've done research on it. Does it cause infertility? Maybe. We don't actually know that. Does that mean it's not significant? Also, no. Your period is a vital sign. So if something's disconnecting, something is off. When it comes to giving progesterone, yes, we are band-aiding the corpus luteum. So it can't make enough progesterone for X, Y, or Z reason. If I come in and take progesterone for a couple weeks, I am boosting it and helping it out. And it does look like in some people, specifically people who might have early pregnancy loss and potentially some progesterone issues, this could be beneficial. But in this case, that didn't help us get pregnant. And your doctor's recommending letrozole, which is one of my favorite options here. Because to me, if I say luteal phase deficiency is the first stage of an ovulation disorder, and that progesterone is a band-aid to maybe try to fix it after it's happened, wouldn't it be better to prevent yourself from having an ovulation disorder in the first place? So if I can give you an ovulation induction medication, and these medications are either letrozole or Clomid, essentially now I am going to tell your body to send out a stronger signal of FSH. Therefore, I am hoping I am going to recruit or grow a better follicle. And if I have a better foundation, a better follicle, once it's ovulated and reforms to be my corpus luteum, I am now hoping it has the capacity to make better progesterone. And now at this stage of my life, to be honest, I do both. I'll give you letrozole and I'll give you progesterone. But for many years, I would just make somebody ovulate and it would correct their luteal phase abnormality. So preventing or fixing the problem is always better than letting the problem exist and treating it afterward, right? Now, why does this work? So letrozole is what we call an aromatase inhibitor. Letrozole eats up estrogen in the periphery or in your body and then tells your brain, hey, there's less estrogen. And remember, the brain doesn't know what's happening in the ovary, but it senses a drop in estrogen, says, oh my gosh, we don't have any eggs growing. We need to get an egg going, sends out a stronger signal of FSH. And now a word from one of our sponsors, Apostrophe. With the temperature starting to warm up, I'm so excited that summer is around the corner and getting ready and looking forward to the summer months. But I know that when I'm outside enjoying nature, I need to pick up supplies to prepare myself for summer adventures. And if you want to get your skin glowing in time for summer, it's time for you to get started with Apostrophe, who is sponsoring this episode. Apostrophe's goal is to help you feel confident in your own skin. So whether you're dealing with breakouts, signs of aging, or acne scarring, Apostrophe will help you love the skin you're in. I personally love that you get access to an expert dermatology team, a tailored treatment plan. It's simple to sign up for your first visit, and there is no in-person appointment or trip to the pharmacy needed. We have a special deal for our audience. Get your first visit for only $5 at apostrophe.com/AAW when you use our code AAW. That's a savings of $15. This code is only available to our listeners. To get started, just go to apostrophe.com/AAW and click Get Started. Then use the code AAW at sign up and you'll get your first visit for only $5. Thank you, Apostrophe, for sponsoring this episode. Letrozole can be especially helpful for people who have some higher baseline estrogen. And these categories tend to be if you have PCOS, and that's because every little follicle makes a teeny weeny bit of estrogen when it's not ovulating, and if you have extra fat cells because they make estrogen also. Letrozole, because it works in the periphery, has a lower side effect profile than Clomid, the other medication. Clomid binds at the brain. So it doesn't matter how much estrogen you had working around, your brain now says there's none, and it's going to send out a stronger signal of FSH. Therefore, that FSH will hopefully grow a better egg, follicle, more estrogen, a better corpus luteum subsequently. Clomid, because it's a SERM, selective estrogen receptor modulator, it binds those estrogen receptors. So you're going to have some symptoms. You might say, oh my gosh, I have no estrogen and I feel menopausal for the 5 to 7 days that I'm taking it. And I have hot flashes and insomnia and I'm cranky and I'm not happy. But it also can impact some of the estrogen receptors inside the uterine lining. And that itself can thin out your lining. So you rob Peter to pay Paul, right? We correct one problem, but we create another one. And this is why for many, many people, letrozole might be the first line option if we're just trying to correct an ovulation disorder. Now, sometimes you don't get the response you want. Sometimes you over-respond. But using ovulation induction medications in someone who's already ovulatory in this case is to try to just improve their ovulation. So if we have a luteal phase deficiency, I want our brain to say, oh, I ovulate normally. What's the big deal? False. You're going to say, oh, I'm ovulating, but something's wrong. I'm having some ovulation dysfunction. My whole cycle is not panning out as it should. So the point of taking the letrozole is to try to see if we can correct this ovulatory dysfunction and hope that it gets you pregnant. The second part of your question of how many cycles do you do this? This is always a hard one, largely dictated on age, how many kids you want, and making sure that everything else is normal, semen analysis, tubes open, etc. If you have been trying for a long period of time and you have ovulated all of these months, it's going to make me want to have less time in the ovulation induction zone before aggressing care. The longest I would say would be acceptable would be 6 months, and that's presuming you're young. Often, by the time we even get to this point, we've been trying to get pregnant for a long time. So we might try 3 months just with timed intercourse, and then we may be a little more aggressive and maybe increase our follicle goal and go to IUI. And some people need IVF. Eventually, you could have two problems at once. You might have a luteal phase deficiency in this first stage of ovulation dysfunction. We correct it and you use letrozole for 6 cycles and you don't get pregnant. And now you have graduated to unexplained infertility. So we don't want you to spend too long in this pathway before we get you to ultimate treatment and get you pregnant. All right, we are going to go on to our next question.
Hi, Natalie. My name's Laura. I actually live here in Austin, Texas. Also, I just had a question. It was my first round of letrozole, and I was not supposed to, or typically ovulate around day 15, but I got a positive LH test starting on cycle day 9, and so I anticipated to ovulate maybe cycle day 10, 11, and my Natural Cycles app was not confirming ovulation, and so long story short, I thought I had ovulated really early in my cycle and was kind of thinking I was in a 2-week wait. I ended up having some extreme like ovulation pain that was way worse than usual, and even some bad left breast pain, probably around cycle day 20. And then my app finally confirmed I ovulated cycle day 22. So that's actually way later than I normally ovulate. But I started positive LH testing once again, like cycle day 9. So I'm just extremely confused this cycle, and I'm wondering, is this normal?
Okay. This is a great example of how sometimes we don't get all the information we need to adequately monitor our cycles. One of the issues with ovulation induction medications, both Clomid and letrozole, is how do they work? They're telling your brain to send out more FSH, and thus LH usually too, because there's some crossing over. So if you are sending out more gonadotropins, what is going to happen is you might get a false positive OPK based on the medication usage. And so we often see a delay in ovulation when you start ovulation induction medications. And that is because you have this estrogen drop, then this delayed rise in your FSH, getting you to grow an egg. And maybe you ovulated a little bit later, like what happened in this cycle. And when you are taking your OPK test, you are actually getting some of those initial gonadotropin pulsing, surging to try to get the egg to grow. So I usually tell people very specifically when to use an OPK if they're using an OPK. And typically it's not ever before day 10 if you took your Clomid or your letrozole between days 3 to 7. If you took it 5 to 9, then I usually don't recommend starting till 11 or 12, but certainly you don't want to miss it, and it depends on your full period pattern. But taking it too close to when you are inducing your body to have a surge of gonadotropins to grow the egg is going to cause exactly what you had. You had a positive LPK, so your OPK showed that you had high gonadotropins, but you actually, that was just stimulating the egg to grow. So what makes more sense and what happened is that you actually ovulated when you felt like you did later based on the other symptoms around cycle day 22. and you should be getting your period if you're not pregnant about 2 weeks after that. So the medication did work. What just didn't work was our plan to capture if it worked or not. Honestly, I don't do much unmonitored ovulation induction anymore for this reason right here. It can cause more stress and confusion, especially if we're not being adequately told when to start OPKs and we don't really understand the mechanism of the medication. So hopefully that helped us understand that there's nothing wrong with you. The medication worked just fine. You were just actually capturing that initial stimulation of the eggs versus the ovulation. And I know that can be so frustrating. So hopefully you got pregnant, but if you didn't, hopefully we feel confident that the medication did work in getting you to ovulate, and we'll just start checking with our ovulation kits a little bit later in the cycle. All right, and our next question is a little bit different take, and I like it as well. So here we go.
Hi, Dr. Crawford. Thanks so much for your last episode on IUI. I just did my first IUI cycle, and at the monitoring, I took Clomid to ideally for super ovulation. So at the monitoring appointment, they said I had two follicles. One was 23 millimeters and one was 25 millimeters. So they told me to do the trigger shot that night. But the nurse practitioner said that the 25 millimeter one was likely overmature and was probably not a good quality egg. Can you speak more about that? And do you think I triggered too late? Thanks so much. And I hope to get my question answered.
So one thing that's really interesting and a big misconception is follicle size. First of all, if you are monitoring ovulation without an ultrasound, that's fine. You just do need to know what it is that you're using to check if your ovulation medication worked. And the one other method besides OPKs, BVT change, cervical mucus, middle Schmerz pain, or your next period, the other two things are actually an ultrasound and then a day 21 or a midluteal progesterone. And the one thing I'll say about this is it has to be drawn about a week after you ovulate. So in the person who spoke two ago, who actually had that positive OPK on day 9, but didn't really have ovulatory symptoms till day 22, that's when she ovulated. That cycle would probably have been about 40 days in length. But if she had gone in for a day 21 progesterone, it would have been low. And somebody could have said, you didn't actually ovulate. But she did. That progesterone level just wasn't drawn in relation to what made sense for when she actually ovulated. So instead of saying a day 21 progesterone, we're going to say a mid-luteal progesterone and let that be a little bit of a distinction between what we're checking. It's not just day 21, it's actually the mid-luteal phase. But if we are doing ultrasound monitoring for different ovulation induction treatments, we're often trying to determine, do you have a response? Do you have any mature eggs? When are they going to be mature? So when do we know how to trigger you? And number 4 is going to be, how many do you have? Have you over-responded or have you not responded? So we're looking at different things. A huge misconception, number 1, is that if you don't get pregnant, it didn't work. The point is to get you to ovulate. So if you don't ovulate, the treatment didn't work. But if you ovulate, the treatment worked. Not everybody's going to get pregnant, and you are maximally going to have a percentage associated with your age if everything else is normal. So if you're 35, I am never ever going to get higher than a 10 to 12% chance of success with one single cycle. So if you're not pregnant after 3 cycles, that's still the most probable scenario. So perspective, age is important. Understanding if the treatment's working, what does working mean? And then how many cycles are you going to do? But follicle size and goals are real important. So number 1, and part of this question, the normal range for a follicle in a natural cycle, if you're using no medications, is typically going to be around 20 to 24 millimeters in size. We have smaller follicle maturity with IVF medications or gonadotropins. So if you are growing the egg directly with FSH or LH, gonal F, follistim, menopure, we're giving you gonadotropins, the follicle range is smaller. The ideal follicle size, most people say, is around 18 millimeters, but the range is about 15 to 20 millimeters. And some people have maturity smaller and some people have maturity bigger. Everybody's different. For Clomid and Letrozole, we tend to want to see those follicles bigger than 18 millimeters. And in fact, I don't even blink an eye all the way up to 25 millimeters. That's still in the mature range. If it hasn't started to ovulate, it's totally fine. Unlike in cycles like IVF. In IVF cycles, I can get what I will call post-mature or degenerating follicles. Like they can get like overcooked. And that's because I'm preventing your body from ovulating. So that egg's mature, it wants to ovulate, and I'm preventing it. In an ovulation induction cycle, you're taking Clomid or Letrozole, even if you're planning to take a trigger shot, you can't overcook it, meaning your body will start to naturally surge if that egg is in the mature range. And so if you come in and it's 25 millimeters and it's not collapsing, you haven't ovulated it, then it's still good. So that is one important distinction in why follicles can get too big. One, the range is smaller often for many patients in IVF, but two, we're preventing them from ovulating. So they can't send the signal. We're blocking ovulation with an antagonist medication or Lupron or something else. So different than an ovulation induction cycle where, yeah, we might be planning to trigger you, and we often do, so that we can control timing or because some people don't naturally surge very well, but your body still has the ability to do so. So it won't get overcooked. It'll just ovulate on its own. So hopefully that gives you some peace of mind. I will stress that everybody's different, and I'll have people who have smaller mature ranges and higher ones on a variety of medications, watching cycles, seeing if follicles are starting to collapse or there's free fluid. We can get an indication that you might be different than average. And you want personalized care and personalized medicine. So ask questions of your care team, but it's really important. In all of these questions today, you've heard circumstances where you're trying to be advocates or you're asking questions and maybe somebody doesn't know the answer or they're giving you the wrong answer. And so trying to understand it yourself is really important so that you can feel like you're going to get the best care possible. Because at the end of the day, this is your body, your health, your care. This is your fertility, your ability to have a baby. The last thing I want to say is that in this case, this patient's doing super ovulation. The goal is different. Super ovulation is one of the treatments for unexplained infertility. It is only a said treatment in people who've been trying to conceive who have regular periods, open fallopian tubes, and normal sperm parameters. In those people, we can try the combined approach of making you purposefully ovulate more than one egg and combining it with an IUI. Just try to get sperm and eggs together. The number of eggs you're looking for and the number you accept is going to depend on age. My goal for a 24-year-old and a 42-year-old are vastly different. And in fact, this is not a good treatment approach if you are over age 38 because it's not moving the needle on your chances of conceiving. And we really got to think about IVF because aneuploidy is limiting our care. If you have irregular periods and we're trying to induce ovulation, that's different. Because if you're not ovulating, you have a clear problem that if we can get you to ovulate, we can help. And remember that ovulation induction medications like Clomid and Femara rely on your brain interpreting estrogen signals and being able to send out appropriate levels of FSH or LH. Therefore, if you have hypothalamic amenorrhea, meaning there's a disconnect in your brain from whatever etiology, you're not going to respond to these medications. And using them can be a very frustrating process. It doesn't mean it's wrong to try them because it's cheap, but what it does mean is you need a very clear plan on how do I know if it's working so that I try it for 1 month or some very limited time and you don't spend 6 to 9 months in this weird zone of trying treatment that's never going to work for you. You would be shocked how often I see that happen to people. So know how you're gauging if the treatment worked, what is the measurable outcome, and then how long are you going to do it if it does work and you're not pregnant before you need to advance care. Hopefully this episode helped you understand a little bit more about your body and ovulation. I love answering your questions, so call and leave them, 657-229-3672. Again, that is 657-229-3672. Thank you, friends. Thank you all for listening to As a Woman. It would mean so much if you could rate, review, and follow the podcast to be notified of new episodes every Sunday. I hope you learned something new, and I hope you share it with someone in your life. Be sure to follow along on Instagram at Natalie Crawford MD and check out the YouTube channel Natalie Crawford MD. If you're interested in becoming a patient, you can also follow Fora Fertility. I'm so thrilled to have you here, part of the community that amplifies others as a woman.
Hey guys, welcome to The Collective. I'm Brianne Helfrich, a 26-year-old bioethics PhD student and clothing brand CEO. Welcome to my podcast where we talk all things health and wellness, navigating your 20s, and becoming the best version of yourself. So sit down, play that episode, and join The Collective.